Yeah, we all are. June 25th, I retired after 33 years of working with middle school kids. And so I like to, down at this level, I feel a little bit more comfortable and at home. But I, pastor was asking me what I wanted to speak about. And actually, this is the first, like I said, this is the first time that I've had the opportunity to speak since I retired. So I am asking for a little grace. Like I said, I'm just used to usually speaking to kids. But I thought what I would share with you this morning is something that's really, really dear to my heart. And something that, after working 33 years with people and becoming a student of people, there's been some things that I've noticed about people. And one of the things that I've noticed is that basically there are three kinds of people in life. We have three kinds of people that we rub shoulders with. There are those kind of people who know what's going on. They can size things up. They can make good decisions because they know what's going on and they can make things happen. Then there are those kind of people who kind of just sit back and they watch what's happening, you know? Sometimes invested, most of the time just remaining pretty much detached, and as long as it doesn't really affect them personally, they just let things happen as they will. Then there's a third kind of people who have no clue what's happening anywhere. I see that in any population, whether I'm working with middle school kids or whether I work with, whether I see adults in a counseling session. There are some people who know what's going on and they can make things happen. There are people who can just, they just sit by and they watch things happen. And then there are people who have no clue what's going on. The thing about life is that life will throw a lot of things at you. And when chaos happens, when something happens to you in life, most people look for somebody who knows what's going on. You know, they look for the people who know what's happening. And they look for the people who seem to be able to hear something that other people can't hear. You know, they look for the people who seem to be guided by something that other people can't see. They seem to be looking for those people that possess the strength and the direction and the perseverance to get through the chaos that they're going through. When something's happening in life, when you have a chaos hit you, you look for that person who just by their very presence, they convey strength and they convey a sense of peace to you. You look for those kinds of people in chaos. And when things are rough, we call those kind of people leaders. And one of the greatest needs that I see in this country and in our communities, in our schools, in our families, in our churches, one of the greatest needs I see that this nation faces right now are we need leaders. We need leaders who are guided by something that other people don't see. We need leaders who hear something that gives them the direction that they need. We need leaders who can, by their very presence, bring peace and comfort and a sense of stability to the situations that we find ourselves in. We call those people, like I said, leaders. So if you haven't guessed yet, one of the things I want to try to do to you is just share some thoughts that I've had over the years about leaders as I've been a student of people. Now, in the service, we're going to see a video where, like, about the way things were, and it's like a black and white. And you remember Andy Griffith, remember Hoss and Little Joe and Bonanza and Leave It to Beaver. Some of you have no idea what I'm talking about. So you're not going to have any way of identifying with Mike Douglas. But Mike Douglas was an Oprah before Oprah was, you know, before Jay Leno, before, I don't even know, Jimmy Kimmel, some of those new guys that are on. Mike Douglas was before them. And I remember watching one of the Mike Douglas' episodes when he had a Mr. Universe that came onto his show. A Mr. Universe. And that's, you know, he's a bodybuilder. I can't remember the guy's name, but he was bigger than Arnold Schwarzenegger, you know. But he came, he was on, and it was the same kind of format as like like a Johnny Carson or Jimmy Kimmel, they come out and they sit down and they talk with the host. So this guy, Mr. Universe, comes out with his bathrobe on, and he sits down at the chair next to Mike Douglas. And Mike Douglas says, you know, introduces him, said, "Oh, yeah, you are Mr. Universe. You know, tell us a little bit about what it's like and everything." And then Mike Douglas said, "Now, can you show us what you can do? You know, what do you do?" And so the Mr. Universe gets up, takes off his bathrobe, and he's standing there in his Speedo, and his body's all lubricated up, you know, and shiny. And he stands in front of the camera, and he takes a couple breaths, and he goes, and Mike looks at him, kind of goes, "Okay, but what can you do?" Yeah. And then he looks kind of back at Mike Douglas quizzically, and he goes, then he goes another pose. And Mike Douglas still didn't get it. And he said to him, neither did Mr. Universe get it. Mike Douglas said to him, "Yeah, but tell me, what can you do? What can you do?" In talking to you about leadership and sharing some things with you, what I really hope to accomplish in these 30 minutes is I want to try to maybe challenge you, get you to examine your life and ask you the question, what are you doing? It's so sad to see people whose life is just a show. All of us have been given very, very special gifts, some unique talents. We've been put in places where nobody else is. And we've been there, put there for a reason. And that reason is that God has something for us to do right where we are. Don't let your life just be a show. As I said, this world needs leaders. And a leader may be nothing. As you will find out, a leader can be just a very simple, simple thing. Being a leader, it's somebody who knows what's happening. It's somebody who has the strength to do it. And it's somebody who can convey a sense of peace and comfort in a situation. I know God has something for you to do where you are. How do I know that? Because you're all here. You woke up this morning. You put your feet on the ground. You're here. There are some people who didn't wake up this morning. You woke up. That means God's got something for you to do. When I wake up every morning, I'm glad. I say, "Oh, okay, another day. God must have something important for me to do." And there's a quote that I came across. I don't know if it was from John Wesley or Charles Wesley, but he said, "I'm immortal till God's done with me. I'm immortal till God's done with me." That gives me confidence when I think about all the battles that I have to go through. I'm immortal, untouchable, impregnable, till God's done with me. I want to try to encourage you to examine your life the same way and to ask yourself the question, what is it that God wants me to do? Because the most precious gift that we've been given is life. Don't let your life be just a show. Whatever age you are, young person, older person, God's got something for you to do. And what that is that is to become a leader to those that you have an influence with. Now, I just want to share three brief thoughts that I've learned over the years studying leadership. And boy, do I profess, I don't profess to be a leader. Believe me, I'm not a leader. I was only an E5 in the military, and I was lucky to make it as an E5. Yeah. I remember the first time I was given a leadership position was in basic training. They put these little paste-on rank things that you wear, you know, and anybody could get it. It just meant that when you wore it, it was your turn to be the boss, to be the leader. And my job was to lead our squad into the latrine and clean the latrine out. That was my first job. So I got about 12 guys. I said, "Okay, guys, come on, let's go." Get to the latrine. There's nobody there. Yeah. I wasn't a very good leader. I ended up cleaning the latrine all by myself. That was my first leadership position. Someone has said that the credentials credentials, a title, a rank, those things don't give you much. The only thing that they will give you is either give you a few minutes to either increase your level of influence or to totally erase it. That's all a position does. That's all credentials do, or a rank. It gives you just a few minutes, gives you somebody's attention for a few minutes to either increase your level of influence with that person or erase it. I learned very quickly that I erased that my influence with those 12 guys because I ended up cleaning the latrine all by myself. So then if that's the kind of leader I am, what gives me the credentials to be able to talk about leadership? Well, I thought about that the first time I was asked to go down to West Point to talk to potential leaders. What can I say to them? But then I thought more about it. You know, I've followed some great leaders in the military. I've followed some guys that I would die for. I've followed men into battle because I knew they loved me and because I loved them. And then there are some other leaders that I wouldn't even follow to the store, you know. But I know what makes a good leader. So who better to talk about what makes a good leader than somebody who knows how to follow somebody who is a leader? After I became a Christian, one of the first verses that I learned was Matthew 4:19, where Jesus said, "Gary, follow me, and I'll make you a fisher of men." So I want to share three things that I've learned from some great leaders, Jesus being probably the most influential in my life. Quickly, three thoughts. The first thought is, you will never, ever truly lead anybody until you learn to serve. And then right behind that is, you will never learn to truly serve until you learn that there's something more important in life than yourself. You'll never lead till you learn to be a servant, and you'll never serve till you learn that there's something more important than you, who you are, what you have, what you can get out of life. When I went down to West Point the first time to talk to the soldiers there, I stayed in the Thayer House, and the Thayer House is right across from the softball field there, and I just kind of walked through the parade ground, and they have this little portico when you pass through when you go there. And on the portico is this plaque that says, "As you enter this field, we ask of you only one thing." Now remember, this is just to go to the softball field. "As you enter this field, remember, we ask of you only one thing, all that you have." And I got, oh my gosh, that's just to go play softball? Yeah, got quite some pretty heavy demands that you're placing on these guys. Ask only one thing, all that you have. I've known many, many leaders who had the potential for being great leaders and had the potential of really impacting others, but they stumbled, they fell short. And what they stumbled at and what they fell short of was self. Self kept them from being a great leader. And you could tell that because you could hear them say, "It's not my turn. Oh, that's not my job. I didn't do it. That's somebody else's job. It's their fault that it didn't get done." Or, "Yeah, I knew it wasn't going to work. I told them before that they shouldn't do it that way, that it was going to fail. I told you so. That's self. You'll never be a leader when you stumble at self. A friend that I've had the honor of getting to know, his name is Dick Couch. He was a Navy SEAL, and he trained the SEALs. You know, not the kind that go arf arf and bounce balls on their heads, you know. He trained Navy SEALs. And he told me that the creed that they try to instill, or at least that he tried to instill, and every person that he had an influence with, was, "This is what I want you to get. This is what I want you to be, what I want to be your heartbeat. This is what I want your mind to focus on. This is what I want your motivation to be in life. And this is it. What can I do to make you look better? Can you imagine working on a team with somebody who, everybody who had that attitude? There's no room for self there. But what can I do to make you look better? You'll never learn to serve until you learn that there's something more important than self. Self will keep people from becoming great leaders. Self will keep people from having a great impact on others. So how do you deal with it? Well, there was a sign in our Special Forces team house in Vietnam that said, to really live, you must almost die. To those that fight for it, life has a meaning the protected will never know. To really live, you must almost die. To those that fight for it, life has a meaning the protected will never know. Over the years, when I've had opportunity to speak sometimes, I've often tried to articulate what that has meant to me. And I'm still struggling with finding words that can accurately and appropriately describe all that that means to me, the meaning that life has now, since I've almost died a number of times. But for our purpose for leadership, I also believe that to really lead, you must almost die. To really lead, you must almost die. And why is that? Because the greatest obstacle to leadership, as I've already said, is self. That's the greatest obstacle to leadership, is self. So why must self die? That leads to my second truth, that the challenge to any form of leadership, the challenge to anybody who wants to try to lead somebody else, the challenge facing any leader is to get me to give up my will to myself. You want me to do something that's going to benefit you? You're going to have to get me to give up my will and my self-interests in order for me to do something that you want me to do. That's the challenge of leadership, is to be able to give up my will to myself. Jesus knew that when in Luke 9:23, he said, if any man will come after me, remember I said earlier, he said, Gary, follow me. Then he says in Luke, Gary, if you will come after me, deny yourself. Deny yourself and pick up your cross and follow me. All leadership to some degree involves being able to convince somebody to be willing to give up their own self-interest. It involves convincing them, persuading them, motivating them, encouraging them to comply with your requests. That's what leadership is. That's the crux of leadership. And good leaders have some great talents and great qualities, good managers. You look for a talented man. You look for the guy who has the gift of administration to do certain things. But in the military, I learned that there's something unique about leadership. In the military, I've learned that when you ask me to do something, you are going to really have to get me to give up my will to myself. Because what you may be asking me to do may result in my death. You're asking me to die, maybe. And there is no way that you can manage me. There's no way that you can advise me, that you can encourage me, that you can give me a good locker room pep talk so that I will go out and be willing to die. You can't do that in the military. I won't follow a business plan or a flow chart into battle. But to get me to go into a battle, you have to convince me to be willing to give up my will to myself. And how can you do that if you're a leader? That's what we ask leaders to do in the military. You've got to convince me to trust you to put my life in your hands and do what you're asking me to do and be willing to die. Like I said, you just can't draw that on a smart board or on a whiteboard and say, you know, this little bubble here goes down, this is the flow chart we're going to follow, guys. No. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to follow that flow chart. No matter how many action plans you develop, I'm not following that. Because I don't want to die. So you can't convince me. But I tell you what you can do. You can lead me. You can lead me into that battle. And I will follow you. And I'll die right alongside of you. How can you do that? You'll never really lead until you learn to serve. And you'll never serve until you learn that there's something more important than self. As a leader, if you can show me that there's something more important than me, I'll follow you. But more importantly, if you can convince me that not only is there something more important than me, but that you know it because you've been there, then I will really follow you. I will gladly put my life in your hands because you've crossed that line. Remember I said that some leaders stumble at self? A lot of leaders will go and just get so close, and then they come up to self and they say, oh, wait a minute. Okay, guys, go, go, go. I'm standing here. Yeah, I'll go right up to here, right with you. But if you can show me that there's something over there that's worth dying for, but more importantly, you can show me that you've crossed that line and you're over here. I'm living here. I'm living where there's something more important than life. I'm living in a life where I know that there are things worth living for and worth dying for. I know it because I'm here. Come on. Then you're a leader. But how do you get here? How do you cross that line? How do you get over there? And this is the good news, bad news kind of thing. The third thing. You want to be a leader? You'll never know there's something more important than self, because self is what you're going to have to overcome in order to be my leader. And how are you going to get to that point where you know that there's something more important than self? You got to die. You got to be over here. And how are you going to do that? If you want to be a leader, be ready, because battles are going to come. Battles are going to hit you. And what I learned in the military, and I'll talk more about this in the main service, but all battles, no matter where they are, whether you're from World War I, World War II, Korea, Vietnam, Iraq, Afghanistan, all those places don't really matter, because all battles are really fought and won or lost here and here. That's where the battles are really won or lost. When I asked Dale to carry me, he fought a battle. He fought a battle here and here. He's saying, wait a minute, I'm in a battle here and you want me to carry you? I may die, Boxy. That's what they used to call me. It's Vietnamese for doctor. I may die, Boxy. He fought that battle. And fortunately for me, he won that battle. And he said, I will, because I know you love me. And he picked me up and he carried me. And he died. But battles are going to come. And where you're going to fight those battles are here and here. And things of you, parts of you, are going to die. Things that you've believed in, things that you've trusted in, things that you've depended upon, things that have always worked for you in the past. In these battles that you're going to be fighting in order to cross self, some of those things are going to have to die. Self is going to have to die. It's not working for me anymore. Jesus said, if you want to follow me, deny yourself. And sometimes we hang on to ourselves so tightly, and Jesus just wants us to let go so we can trust him more. Crossing that line means death to me. But all of a sudden I'm over here, And I'm free. Because I'm finding out that Jesus is holding me. I'm living in an area, in a way of life. I'm living a life where I know that there's something more important than what's back here. There's something worth living for and worth dying for. And if you want to be a leader, you're going to have to let parts of you die so that God can resurrect and let His power really work in you as you live over here. And dying's not fun. My wife and I have been battling cancer for a number of years, and it's not fun. Parts of us have died. When we found out she had cancer, I just said, you know, Lolly, Vietnam almost consumed me. And we can let this cancer either consume us or trust in God and let it conform us to your image. We decided to trust God and not be consumed, but be conformed to the image of Christ, because that's God's original plan with all of us. He wants us to make us more like His Son. And when those things die, it may be hard, but what's going to be left, what you're going to be standing over here with, you are not going to have a vision. You're going to have a vision that'll enable you to see things that other people back here can't see. You're going to be hearing things over here now. You're going to be hearing the voice of God speaking to you, saying, I'm with you, I will never leave you nor forsake you. But you're going to be here hearing that, knowing that, and His presence and that vision that's going to be in your life is going to convey peace and stability and comfort and hope. And those people back here, and they're going to say, I want what you got, because you know something that I don't know. And in the midst of this chaos, you seem to be doing okay. I want that. I want that. How can I get it? Follow me. Walk across the line to where Jesus is. The beautiful thing is that Jesus comes back over here all the time and walks with you. And then He'll try to escort us. Because what He's interested in doing is helping, wanting us to become totally dependent on Him so that we can say, be Thou my vision. Jesus, be Thou my vision. I want to close with sharing a story. A friend of mine wrote a book called Patriot's Heart. And in that story, or in that book, he told the story of a Sergeant Chris Reed, who was a member of the 75th Rangers. And Chris was in Mogadishu, in Somalia. And Chris, he was a sergeant. He was a leader, a platoon sergeant. And he didn't have to go out that day. He was getting ready to go back. To go back away from all the duty that was going on. He didn't have to be there that day. But he said, look, it's our squad's turn to go. I'm going to go with our squad. It's where I belong. You know? So Chris went with his squad. And this story is told by a general who was visiting wounded Marines or wounded soldiers. And the general had stopped and talked to Chris in his bed and asked him how he got wounded. And Chris told him, he said, you know, sir, and told him that story. You know, I wasn't supposed to be there that day, but I wanted to be with my men because it's where I belonged. And the last thing I remember is helicopters exploding and just seeing red and just tremendous pain. And that's all I remember. But what had happened was is that, if you know what happened in Black Hawk Down, that's the movie they made about this. Helicopters were shot down and the 75th Rangers went out to rescue the guys who were in the chopper. Well, Chris was part of that group, and he got caught in the fire when the choppers crashed, and he ended up in the hospital. And when the general was talking to him, Chris was a changed person, because Chris had now lost both legs and one arm, burned over most of his body. And when he told the general, "You know, sir, I didn't have to be there that day, but I wanted to." And then he said something that was so powerful. He said, "Sir, you know, knowing what I know now, I'd do it again. It only cost me an arm and a leg. Knowing what I know now, I'd do it again." Do you think he has a vision now? "Knowing what I know now, it was worth it. I'd do it again. What I know over here is worth losing my arm and my legs. Because this is so much better. I have a vision. I would do it again." That's a vision. In the next service, I'm going to share a little bit more about what my vision is. But I want to close with just one of my favorite verses. And sometimes people are kind of amazed when I say this is my favorite verse, because some people have never even knew this book was in the Bible. It's Nahum 1:3. It's right after Micah and Nahum. And the verse just says, "God has His way in the whirlwinds and in the storms, and the clouds are the dust of His feet." That's my vision. Knowing that God has His way, God is more powerful than my storms, more powerful than tornadoes, whirlwinds. He has His way in those things. And the clouds that I see in my storms are just the dust of His feet. I cross that line, and I still fight battles. I still have storms. I still have clouds. I still have a fog of battle that blinds me sometimes. But He is my vision, and I know that He is here, because His Word tells me that these clouds are just the dust of His feet. That's all. May we close with a word of prayer. I thank You for giving me this opportunity to share really what I feel is a tremendous need in our country. And I hope that maybe in some way I've encouraged you, challenged you even to just examine your life. And with whatever days we have left, God, may I be a leader. May I be a servant. Help me hold on to and be aware of that fact that You've got a plan for my life. And if my feet hit the floor this day, that must mean that You've got something You want me to do. If you're looking for something to do today, this is something my wife has said to me a number of times. She would, "Gary, today, you know, try to do something for the first time. When was the last time you did something for the first time?" You might find out that life is a wonderful, wonderful adventure when you start doing things for the first time. Let's pray.